Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent, documentary, and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. A small boat reaches the shores of a raw and desolate landscape. A group of six have struggled across the narrow sea to find a new home. They are starving, desperate, and living 45,000 years ago. The film is called Out of Darkness. It's an amazing film, amazing in so many different ways. The story itself, a look at pre-civilized human beings, the struggle, the interpersonal kind of dynamics involved, the setting, the language. There's so much here. A film, again, is called Out of Darkness. We're joined today by one of the co-writers, as well as the director, Andrew Cumming. Andrew, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. This is such an interesting story. It's such an interesting idea. And there's something I want to touch on later on, but for filmmakers who are looking for ways in which they can create a world, which is what you did here, I want to talk about that because I thought what you did was for someone who's looking for a way to make a movie and you put it all in the story. And you found this wonderful setting for it. Tell me a little bit about the inspiration for Out of Darkness.
I was coming out of film school and I stumbled across a documentary on the BBC called The History of Us. And the first episode was about, you know, human migration out of West Africa and into Europe. And I just became obsessed with the idea of telling a story in that time period, because you could therefore say, you could say quite a lot about us as a species if you go back to those roots, why we are the way we are. I was put onto William Golding's follow-up to Lord of the Flies, a book called The Inheritors, which is a really tremendous book that I think might be better than Lord of the Flies. It certainly affected me a lot more when I put it down, because again, I just felt he awoke something in me, an awareness of us as a species and what we're capable of and the terrible, terrible things we can do if we feel we're justified, if we feel threatened enough by something other, something we don't understand. So all these were swirling in my head. We were dealing with Brexit over here. Brexit was rearing its head and there was a lot of really ugly rhetoric, a lot of xenophobia. Something similar was happening across the Atlantic with the rise of Mr. Trump. And it just, all this stuff was swirling around. And then, yeah, I thought, you know what? I'd love to make something in this time period. I don't think I'll get the chance. I'll make this in 20 years if I'm lucky. And then I met Oliver Kassman, the producer, and we had a general meeting and he said, oh, I've been thinking about doing something in the prehistoric time periods, like a horror idea. And that was it. He just had the sort of the confidence and the naivety to say, well, why wait 20 years? Let's just do something now. Let's try it as a debut. So yeah, him and I thrashed out this really basic 3-page outline, the structure of which is still intact in the film today. And then we spoke to Ruth Greenberg. We brought her in, pitched what we had. And she said, yeah, I think I can work with this. And she had been very keen to tell a story that looked at female violence, both perpetrated by women and towards women, and how you could do that through a horror lens. And then, yeah, the three of us went off on this journey together and a literal journey, because we went on a recce. Before Ruth wrote a page of the script, we went on a recce up northwest Scotland because I was really confident that we could find the right landscapes and the right sort of ancient feeling, that mythic feeling that we needed. And yeah, you know, then you just keep chiseling away at that script, boiling it down to the absolute essentials.
In addition to all that you described, there's even more in terms of putting this film together. There is finding the right actors for it, which I thought were just wonderful in the film, the people who are in it. The cinematography is so appropriate, so much so, and language. And something so, what an interesting twist and what a brave twist it is to put on a story. First-time feature filmmaker out with your film, that's an ambitious enterprise in many ways. Tell us a little bit about that particular part of the film. We are hearing a language that did not exist before we hear it in your film. Let's talk a little bit about that.
I sort of struggled in the beginning. I thought it would be in English because I had that debutitis fear that directors have, where you think, God, am I going to limit a lot of my audience by having the subtitles on the screen, you know, because you want as many people to see it as possible because you get one chance to make a first impression, right? So, so I sort of talked myself out of it being in another and a made up language. And then just over the course of development and workshopping scenes and saying it out loud, I just realized I'm already making this humongous commitment to this time period and getting that right. Why not just go the whole way and really commit to it? So yeah, we made that decision. I can't remember at what point in the process, but about 4 or 5 weeks before we started pre-production, Oliver reached out to a friend of his, Dr. Daniel Anderson, who's an academic, a multilinguist. He translates a lot of papers from various Indo-European languages into English. So he's, you know, quite well versed in many different languages. And we set him the challenge. You know, I'd sort of thought, okay, if humans, it's generally accepted that we came out of West Africa around 60,000 years ago. And we passed, you know, we traveled north and some people moved into Western Europe, some people went east. And I thought, okay, Sanskrit is from that region. Arabic, obviously, is in that region. Basque is around 10,000 years old. So what, maybe we can just have some sort of a mother tongue, you know, the parent language of those three languages, and that can give us a ballpark to work in. And Daniel went away and took the script and then delivered us this language. And then we had the dual dialogue function and final draft. So the English was down one side, the Tola was down the other side, so that, you know, our script supervisor could, our poor Shada, so our script supervisor could follow when we were on set. And I sat on this chair at this desk, read this thing to myself out loud, and I thought, oh, I think this will work. I think this will be okay. He gave us this fully formed, cohesive, very believable and well-structured language. That was it.
I think that's so important because it sounds just familiar enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's hints of words, even if you don't know what language they are, you've heard some. It feels like some. And one other thing I would say about the work, and you know, for a long time I have been kind of a cinephile snob about horror films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back, I mean, they're going back to the classics of the Draculas and Frankensteins and Dr. Caligari and all that. Yes. I mean, I get why they are revered. But over the last, I don't know, few years, I'll say 10 years, but a few, mm-hmm. last few years, the way in which horror has opened so many doors to so many different stories. And I think that really does help your film in the regard of, as an audience, going in to see, well, quote unquote, a horror film. It's really not. That's just a label. There's really a lot more going on than simply that. It opens the mind. I think that's the one benefit of one of the many benefits of horror films is they open your mind. You're willing to accept a lot of things you might not otherwise, right?
Yeah, I agree. And that was the thing. I think this film had to be a horror film. The just in terms of what we wanted to say and how we knew what the thrust of the story was going to be and how that would reflect the themes that we wanted to tackle. It had to be a horror movie. I can't wait to see Sasquatch Sunset, which I've heard great things about, but I know it's not that. Like, you know, it's not like this isn't a slice of life of this primitive people. This was, how do you take the tropes of horror that are familiar and put them in this very alien, very quite esoteric setting, and still have the audience find something familiar in it. And you know, like there's no coincidence that horror movies have become so ambitious and so ambitious in their in the craft of the making of them, but also in the messages that they're conveying because of the time period we're in. I mean, whenever you're in times of economic hardship or social political strife, horror movies come to the fore again because people like being scared. I mean, I've got two young children and you jump out and they get frightened and they laugh. It's just something that's built into us from the womb. We love that thrill of being scared, but being in a safe environment to feel that emotion. But it also, you know, allows people to contemplate things and process things that are troubling them, you know, in their daily lives and on larger geopolitical levels. So I think there's no coincidence that there are films like Get Out or Hereditary or The Babadook or I can go on. It's just, it feels like a really ripe time to delve into some dark stuff.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning Get Out. It's one of my favorite films. I just, every time I watch it, I feel like this is a masterpiece. And there's so many, you mentioned some other ones as well, but absolutely. I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Andrew Cumming, and he is the director as well as co-writer of the film Out of Darkness. It's coming out here in Los Angeles on February 9th. Be looking for this for so many reasons. It just has a great look. And again, I know this, I'm not exactly sure where it was filmed, but you mentioned a couple of places that you were scouting, but it just has every feel of a time in human development, human history, that feels so much rooted in, this is exactly the struggle that these nomadic people would have had before we started farming, before we started building infrastructure of any kind, anything like this. This is what we were doing. We were surviving. Let's talk about your cast. There's just so many people to recommend in this cast. And how did you put them together?
Really, the most simple answer is you get a good casting director. And Heather Bastin, who's based in London, she's got good contacts with all the agents, which you need. But she likes street casting. She likes looking for people outside of the box. And that's where you can find interesting people like Arno Lunning, for example, who doesn't have a lot of acting experience, but his physicality, he looks like something from a Sergio Leone movie. And that was really crucial for the part of Odal the Elder, because he needs to look like a very particular type of elder statesman who's a sort of spiritual dogmatist. He has a dark streak, right? So you need somebody that gives you that feeling instantly that I don't like this guy. I'll get in the boat with him. I'll eat with him, but I'm keeping my distance. So yeah, and Luna Mwezi, who plays the boy Heron, is now a teenager, and as a girl, identifies as a young woman who's from Switzerland. But I saw a movie that she made in Switzerland, and I thought, she's so good. If she'll shave her hair, she can play a 10-year-old boy. And luckily she was happy to shave her hair and we cast her. But oh, yeah. But Safia, Safia was another one of Heather's finds. Safia had made like a couple of short films. She had done some acting workshops at a quite a well-regarded children's acting workshop in a place called Nottingham in the UK that has reared a lot of very good young actors for Shane Meadows, one of our strong British filmmakers. And yeah, she did a great tape. I loved her tape. I loved her look. I believed her. She had such a great ability, even in those self-tapes, that she could transmit thought. And that's what you want from a cinematic actor. And then we eventually got her in the room. Same with all the cast, actually. I set up an obstacle course, turned over a table, gave them a mop handle. Okay, you've got to hunt the hare, hunt the rabbit. And just to see how they would move, how they duck, how they dive, how they run, how their imaginations work. And so, because you want to see their physicality, because so much of the film is so physical. And Safia had been a dancer. So she moved, she had the grace of a dancer, but she had this really strong physical presence, even though she was 19 at the time. And the kid can act. I mean, she really, 19 years old, she carries this entire film on her shoulders. The moment where she tells Kit Young's character, Gare, that she's scared but she wants to live, is like, when you see that on a giant screen, I'm like, that's cinema. That's how you perform for cinema. You see an entire life behind those eyes, and it just breaks my heart every time I see it. So it was just, but it's the planets need to align. Everybody needs to be in the right place at the right time. Fortunately, no one was working because it was COVID, but Kit Young had such a great energy as Gare, and Chuku, who plays Adem, has such a great, there's a leadership there. He wasn't just an out and out bad guy. I mean, I would get in the boat with this guy, but then he could turn on these flashes of anger, but also had such great care towards the Luna, who played his son. And Yola Evans, who plays Avi, who's this oppressed, this woman who's just been battered by the patriarchal structure and has just lived under such duress her entire life and is basically just this human incubator for Adem's children. She just, again, conveys so much pain in a look. you know, these aren't, hopefully these people aren't just fodder for a monster. You get to know that there's a life in there before it's snuffed out.
One last thing, that is that it all works together really well. And there's something I'm sort of reminded of as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, sitting around that campfire. What do humans do? They tell stories. They tell each other stories. It's so basic to our being, to our understanding, to understand the world around us. Even when they're facing dire circumstances, the stories are tales of woe, tales of caution, tales of a better place, and all the things that we tell each other. And the characters that are in the film are in some ways so representative of a broader audience of people, the spectrum of our humanity, which I just really love about the film.
That was something that we were really excited by, is just the film opens with a group of people sitting in the dark around a flickering light, listening to a story. And that's, you know, quite a meta comment on cinema. And in fact, the Tola translation for the word light is film, which is obviously just a play on film. So that was a little Easter egg that Daniel Anderson put in. So, you know, we tried to give a little wink to the audience and in that regard. But yeah, that's the thing I hope people pick up on, is myth-making, storytelling is the thing that will bring us together and the thing that will pull us through, because it allows you to see, to understand another human being or to understand another culture. And that's the thing that will hopefully stop people like Donald Trump getting a second term.
Amen to that. Well, I want to thank you so much. Again, the film is called Out of Darkness. It's here in theaters in Los Angeles starting on February 9th. Be looking for it. It's being released through Bleecker Street Media, so obviously a great outfit to land with for your distribution. And Ben Wheatley's one of my favorite film directors. He works in a certain way of going about telling a story. But Andrew Cumming, welcome to the club. And thank you so very much for your time today. The film Out of Darkness, Andrew Cumming, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.